Today's Bible reading comes from Matthew 15, 21 to 28. Leaving that place, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. A Canaanite woman from that vicinity came to him, crying out, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is suffering terribly from demon possession." Jesus did not answer a word. So his disciples came to him and urged him, "Send her away, for she keeps crying out after us." He answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel." The woman came and knelt before him. "Lord, help me," she said. He replied, "It is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs." "Yes, Lord," she said, "but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Then Jesus answered, "Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted." And her daughter was healed from that very hour. This is the word of the Lord.
One of the most well-known verses from the Bible, I guess, is John 3:16. "For God so loved the world that whoever believes on him should not perish, but have everlasting life." And the word "believes" there, if you have a look into the real meaning of that word there, you'll find that it's to do with trusting, it's to do with relying upon, and it's to do with clinging to. So it's not just an academic belief that Jesus is urging us towards here. It's a trusting, relying on, clinging to sort of belief. In the last 2 weeks, we've been hearing stories of miracles where the disciples of Jesus were called on to do something which required them to trust Jesus, to rely on him and to cling to him. And they sort of did what they were supposed to do, but they did need to learn a lesson. A couple of weeks ago, Peter Blackburn spoke to us about that miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 plus people on the mountainside. You remember Jesus said to these disciples, "They're hungry. Can't just send them home." And they said, "But you feed them," he said. "Well, we've only got 5 loaves and 2 fish. But Jesus says, "Feed them nevertheless." But their focus, of course, was on the impossibility of the situation, the impossibility of this instruction they'd just been given. And they were distracted by their own inadequacy, and they did not believe it could be done. But the lesson that day from Peter was, give what little you've got anyway, because a little bit in the hands of God can be made large. And then last week when Barry Cox was with us, there was the story about Jesus walking on the water. You remember the disciples were in the boat and Jesus was on the shore still, and then when they were out in the middle of the lake, a huge storm blew up and they were terrified. And Jesus comes to them walking on the water, and Peter says, if he can come out and walk on the water too, was that all right? And Jesus said, yes, you may. And it starts well, doesn't it? But then Peter takes his eyes off Jesus and he focuses on the waves, and fears and doubts take over and he needs to be rescued. And Jesus says to him, a bit harsh you might think, but Jesus says to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And the lesson on that occasion was to keep your eyes on Jesus in the midst of the storm. Let your doubts teach you to have a great faith, cling to Jesus and rely on him. In these two incidents in the last 2 weeks, we've seen a type of faith which Jesus isn't really able to praise. And in fact, he says to Peter, "You man of little faith." But their faith was centered around and focused on their own limited abilities and their frailties. But in today's story, if you were listening carefully, Jesus says he sees a type of faith in this Canaanite woman that comes to him that he is pleased with. And he says so. "Woman, you have great faith," he says. So we're looking at this incident today to learn about the qualities of that faith which the woman displays on that occasion and which Jesus refers to as great faith. But just a moment before I look at that, just a couple of comments about the setting of where this happened. Today's story involves a Canaanite woman who lives in the region of Tyre and Sidon. Tyre and Sidon are up on the coast of the Mediterranean Sea, and they're well northwest of Jerusalem, and they're away from the areas that the Jewish influence happened, and the probably mostly Greek influences happening there, and pagan worship and idol worship were common in that area over there. And it's from that sort of culture that this lady comes to Jesus. The Jews and the Canaanites did not like each other at all. They were arch enemies from back at the time when the Israelites were coming in to take the land that became known as Israel, and they didn't get along at all. Jesus, I think, had deliberately taken his disciples over to that area. And the reason I think he did that was because if you read just before this incident in Matthew, you'll see Jesus having a run-in with the Jewish authorities. They were getting after him because they said, look at your disciples. They don't eat and fast properly. They don't follow the rules and they don't wash properly before they eat. And they're unclean. And Jesus then goes on to talk to the Jewish authorities about what really makes a person unclean is what's on the inside, not what goes in the mouth and out again. They're just symbolic things, but the real thing happens inside. And I think it seems to me that Jesus had deliberately taken his disciples away from this legalistic, rule-following obsession because he wanted them to learn a lesson about real faith. And he thought, we need to go away. We need to go where this will not come back, and we can learn about great faith. So great faith, this is just a point before we look at the woman and the story. Great faith is not based on strict legalistic rule following. It's not based on pleasing God by our deeds and our works. As we shall see later, it's based on the grace and the goodness of God. But let's look at the woman in the incident, shall we, to see what we can learn from her. I hope that we can see that there are three things that she shows us as being necessary to have great faith, and there's one thing that is not necessary to have great faith. We can learn this from this woman's actions. So point number one that we learn from this woman: great faith requires us to acknowledge our need. This woman certainly had a great need. Her daughter, we don't know how old she was, whether she's a little tot or whether she was older, I don't know. We don't know that. She was suffering terribly, the reading said. We don't know the details of that suffering either, but apparently the word, when I looked up that word that's used for suffers terribly, in the Amplified Bible, it talks about the word has to do with misery and distress and cruelty. So this little girl was suffering terribly. I don't understand demon possession very much. I have a friend down at the beach where we live who lived in Arnhem Land for a long time, and he's told me a few stories that are frightening, of experiences that he had up in that culture there. So I just know that this girl needs Jesus' attention, and I'm not going to try and understand it any more than that. But the woman knows that she cannot handle it herself. Perhaps some of you have sat by while children suffered terribly. I know some of you have. And it's not nice. And this woman comes to Jesus because she knows that what she's faced with is beyond human help. The chances are, given the culture that she lived in, that she'd possibly been to visit spiritualists and exorcists, and all sorts of pagan remedies might have been tried, but to no avail. In our modern day situation, there's lots of medical and psychological help and knowledge available to us. There's rehab facilities for people who need them. There's help organisations, Alcoholics Anonymous and drop-in centres and things like that come to mind, and so on. And they create the impression that we can deal with all our problems that people face, just get the right treatment, you'll be okay. But the truth is, we don't have it all figured out, do we? There are spiritual problems, let alone demon possession. There are spiritual problems, including the sinful human heart, that are largely denied by the popular culture and the popular narratives as being unreal and not there, really. We can get everything right on our own, the narrative says. Just got to figure it out. But we can't fix ourselves, or our families, or our world. That's point number one. This needs to be acknowledged and faced. The woman in our story is so much in need, she has no difficulty in acknowledging that she cannot handle it herself. She's even willing to embarrass herself in several ways, I think. As I said, the Canaanites and the Jews didn't get along in general. In general, they hated each other. And I can well imagine that her friends would have advised her, oh, he's not going to listen to you, for starters. He's a Jewish man. They won't even listen to Jewish women, unfortunately. That was the culture. let alone a Canaanite woman. Just leave him alone. He's not going to listen to you. I can well imagine that advice being given. And she calls out to Jesus as the Son of David. And I think that might well have stirred some anger amongst the Canaanite people. Because David was the king back in history who led his armies against the Canaanite people, amongst others. And there's that sort of racial sort of unhappiness back there in history that might have easily surfaced amongst some of her compatriots. And apart from all that racial stuff, she apparently makes quite a scene with her shouting. She must have kept it up for quite some time. The disciples get embarrassed and angry with her, and they say to Jesus, aren't you going to send her away? She's annoying us. She keeps chasing after us. Well, she wasn't chasing after them, of course. She was chasing after Jesus. But anyway, that's another issue. But her desperation is greater than the potential embarrassment that she faced. Embarrassment can be an obstacle, can't it, in exercising a great faith? What will others think if they know I had this problem? Especially my Christian friends. Better to live in denial. Better to just minimalise it and say to yourself, oh, nobody's perfect. Everybody does this. Or cover it up somehow. Maybe the embarrassment of the problem is so great that we think it's too terrible even to mention to the Lord. Too severe, perhaps. Too disgusting that he wouldn't want to listen to this. Well, Hebrews 4:13 assures us that not a creature exists that is concealed from his sight, but all things are open and exposed, and we are to the eyes of him with whom we have to do. So just to repeat, firstly, great faith requires us to acknowledge our need. The first of the Beatitudes in Matthew chapter 5, verse 2, assures us that blessed are the poor in spirit. And I think poor in spirit speaks of humility and an acknowledgement of need. Blessed are the poor in spirit who are willing to acknowledge that. For theirs, Jesus says, is the kingdom of heaven. Anyway, moving on. The second thing that this great faith of this woman in our story shows us is that great faith requires knowing who will fill that need. As we've already commented, our world is much aware of many great needs. Lots of people know they need something, but they don't know where to go. They try this and they try that. And our popular culture and the narrative says that strong laws will be the answer. Good education will solve it. Clever science will eventually solve our problems. But great faith requires knowing that only Jesus can properly address the deepest needs of individuals and from there the wider world. Only Jesus can change the self-centeredness of the human heart. We had a group of people camping up at our property with us last year sometime, I think it was. And amongst the group was a young fellow, early 20s I guess, who worked at the youth detention centre in Townsville as one of the warders there. And there'd been a spate of, you know, crime, youth crime in Townsville at that time. So the conversation around the bonfire at night came around to that at some point. And someone said to him, tell us what you think. You work with kids all the time that are involved in the crime wave and so on. What's the answer to it? What have we got to do, you know? And he sat there and after a moment he said, only one thing, and he said, and that's Jesus. He said, all the rest of it is just going nowhere. Just the revolving doors. Only Jesus can change hearts. So that was wisdom from a young fella in the midst of a difficult situation. Anyhow, this woman that we're talking about has great faith, not just because she is desperate for help and acknowledges it, but because she realises that her help can only come from Jesus. She had already, no doubt, heard about the things he had been doing over in the east, over around Galilee. And Mark's version of this incident tells us that Jesus and his disciples had come over to Tyre and Sidon in order to get away and have a spell. He didn't really want to be found, but she sussed him out, obviously. She heard he was coming. Jesus' words, come to me, all you who labour and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. I am the way, the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. Words like that upset many people today. even discuss them. Exclusivists, they say. These bigoted, arrogant Christians think they are the only ones who know everything. I'm entitled to my own opinion, thank you very much. I'll do things my way, and don't you dare criticise me. But these are the words of Jesus. He said, come to me if you're labouring a heavy laden. I am the way, the truth and the life. So great faith requires you to take those words as true and know that that's where to go for help. The third thing that we learn from this woman that is required for great faith is that great faith requires persistent trust. This story is a bit odd and bizarre in some ways, in the sense that Jesus does and he says some things that are, on the surface of it all, at the very least, a little bit rude. Did you notice that the woman was calling out for help, and the passage tells us that Jesus ignores her, takes no notice of her, turns his back on her. In spite of her pleading with him, he just ignores her. I'm not sure exactly what was going on here, to be honest. Why did he ignore her? Was he testing her faith? I don't think it needed any more testing than what was going on, to be honest. I wondered whether more likely he was trying to teach the disciples a lesson about persistence, perhaps. Or maybe he was just wanting to expose their prejudice, preparing them to accept that he came also for others than just the Jews. And maybe it was for her sake, in the sense that the repeating of the Son of David business over and over and over got me a little bit curious for a while there. Was it in her eyes, remember she lives in a pagan society, was it in her eyes some sort of magic chant that she thought perhaps would get him going or something like that and please him, and like you might do to an idol that you were worshipping? I don't know for sure what Jesus was thinking when he just ignored her. But whatever he was doing here, she gives up on the chanting and she simply kneels at his feet and she says, Lord, help me. Her efforts and her procedures have been reduced to humility, but she responds with persistence. Did the disciples perhaps just need to see that, maybe? Jesus told her a parable one time, you remember, about a woman who was being treated harshly by debtors and by creditors and so on. And she went to the judge, but he wouldn't have anything to do with her. But she kept going, and she kept going, she kept going. And Jesus says, well, be like that woman in your prayers, just persist. Has anyone ever had the experience of feeling that God wasn't there as you prayed earnestly for something? Seeing a few heads nodding. Well, you wouldn't be the first. Remember the promise to Abraham way back in Old Testament times? To have a son and an heir and for nations to be brought into being through him. Many years went by, I think about 15 in fact, and in the middle of it all, Abraham took things into his own hands, and there was disasters that followed from that. King David wrote in Psalm 13, how long will you forget me, O Lord, forever? How long will you hide your face from me? But then the psalm ends with the resolution on David's part to persist anyway. And he remembers how bountifully God has dealt with him. And many of the psalms where we find these words, wait on the Lord. Just be patient and wait. Even when God does not seem to be responding to our prayers, keep persisting. He often works in ways we can't predict or expect. We know that. He often has some moulding and shaping to do to keep the growing of a great faith. So three things are required for a great faith that we learn from this lady. We need to acknowledge our need. We need to know who can deal with the need. And we need persistent trust. But perhaps the best news in this story is that there is something that is not required. Great faith does not require our worthiness. The second rude thing that Jesus does is make a blatantly racist comment. You're asking me for help, he says. But in verse 24, he answered, I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. You're not an Israelite. You're a Canaanite. Not a Jew. You worship incorrectly. The wrong God. How rude is that? But then he takes it a step further with a comment about the children and the dogs. Did you notice that? He says, it's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs. The dogs he mentioned are in fact the pet house dogs. There's a word for that apparently. That's different than the street mongrels that he wasn't sort of saying that to her. But I'm not too sure that helped very much, to be honest. And his point was, you know you have no right to ask this of me. You aren't worthy. Well, you could think that she might get a bit indignant at about that point and give him some sort of a rude hand signal, which I won't do. Or say some words that you've heard in the street occasionally when this sort of situation develops. But I won't say them either. You'd be happy to know. But her response is what Jesus was looking for. Verse 27, she says, yes, Lord, but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. In other words, the dogs get fed, you know. And effectively, I know I have no worthiness of my own, no basis on which to demand your help. I come in humility, asking for you to be gracious and in fact relying on your grace. So here's the good news that this Canaanite woman teaches us. Our worthiness has nothing to do with it. She's not worthy and neither are we. Great faith is not based on our worthiness. It doesn't require us to be worthy. We stand before God in our need, not because of our own worthiness, because of his grace and the provision that he has made in Jesus. Great faith turns to the one who died for us to make us worthy to stand before him. And I need to add also that great faith is not stopped by our unworthiness. We can be aware of our unworthiness and our failures and still have a great faith in the grace and the goodness of God towards us. So just in closing, having just drawn this confession of unworthiness from the woman, Jesus comments on her great faith. He says, woman, you have great faith. And then he answers her prayer by healing the daughter. But I want you to notice, please, carefully, Jesus did not say, you have great faith, therefore I am bound to heal your daughter. You have earned it by having this great faith. He didn't say that. He just comments on her great faith as being the sort of faith that he looks for. We would be wrong to conclude that having a great faith forces God to bow to our every wish, or that he rewards us because of great faith by giving us our every wish. How he chooses to answer our prayers is based on his wisdom. He sees things that we can't see, and also on his enduring grace and goodness and love towards us. In Psalm 23, which we're going to sing at the end of the service in a modern version of that, in Psalm 23, David speaks of how God provides for him in various ways and in various circumstances. He speaks about how God guides him in paths of righteousness. But he also then says, but he allows me to walk in the valley of the shadow of death. But he finishes the psalm by reminding himself that surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Great faith trusts in that goodness and grace. Amen.